Today on Wings, Saudi Arabia and the U.S.
Saudi Arabia, where do I begin? It's complicated.
Every time the Obama administration approves another round of weapons to the Saudis, Congress doesn't say anything about it.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The Real News Network, based in the U.S. and Canada, hosted a summit on Saudi Arabia on March 5, 2016. Saudi journalist Ebtihal Mubarak started off the panel about women in Saudi Arabia.
It is hard to have your own country as your sole enemy. I recall reading a very expressive line opening the Human Rights Watch report years ago on Saudi women called Perpetual Minors. It is an anonymous quote of one of the Saudi women that the Human Rights Watch researchers met, and it says, how can I be proud of a country who's not proud of me? That line, you know, it just, it really sums up the relationship that the Saudi women, you know, feel towards their country. It is basically a gender apartheid. I said this when I was back in Saudi Arabia reporting. I said it in CNN. It upset officials back then, and I mean, reality should upset them. Basically, I mean, you wanted me to explain to you, to walk you through the life of Saudi women. Saudi women are highly educated. Much more, I mean, a bit more educated than the men. There's a high rise of unemployment, basically because of bad planning of the government and also the sex segregation at workforce and all walks of life, and we're going to get that, to that later. Basically, if you are a Saudi woman who are born in a house that is in a household, in a family that's a little bit more open-minded, you can really get a lot of things done. But that's a privilege that the majority of women don't have. So it is basically up to your legal guardian to decide for you what to study, where to go, to travel or not, and there are very little even things in your life, like issuing an ID, or going to have an operation at the hospital, even. I mean, the very big things are the really small things. You are totally dependent on your legal guardian. That could be your father, your husband, your brother, your cousin, your uncle, or even your son. But really, this is, I mean, having all this authority in the legal male guardian, I mean, a male figure, in your life, I mean, the absence of law and accountability, it really turns the monster really in men. If you give so much power to anyone, so, I mean, all these terrible cases, I mean, the bad treatment of Saudi women is not because Saudi are inheritedly by DNA, you know, hate women. It's because they have all this power in their hands. And, you know, if you have that much power, there'll be an abuse of power. I'd like you also to know the Saudi women that want you to speak out and want your help, but they also, it's very important to mention, as the media mentioned clarified at the beginning of the conference, this is not about Islamophobia or victimizing certain groups or patronizing, you know, others. There has been a lot of work that Saudi women are doing on the ground, but it's incredibly hard and very, very difficult due to the ban of civil society in Saudi Arabia. Since the establishment of the country, there are no independent NGOs. There are no student clubs at the universities. We don't know each other to begin with, so we can collaborate and work on things that any regular civil society in any country would do. So if you want me to speak more, I can go on and on.
That was Saudi journalist Ebtihal Mubarak, recorded by The Real News at the May 2016 summit on Saudi Arabia. Ebtihal Mubarak now lives in the U.S. and writes for publications like Foreign Affairs. Also at the summit was Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the women's peace organization Code Pink. 4 months after the summit, she published a book titled Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection. Her book tour included Tampa, Florida, home of community radio WMNF. Here's her interview with the hosts of the program from a woman's point of view.
Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Englehart. And we thank you so much for joining us for From a Woman's Point of View, the program that brings you the voices of women seldom heard in the media or elsewhere.
We will be joined by Medea Benjamin about her latest book. You know, I'm lucky enough to know Medea Benjamin, and to me, she's one of the most intelligent, but compassionate. She has a rare blend, and I can't think of anybody I'd rather be talking to with the challenges we have. We'll be looking at Saudi Arabia, but we'll also be looking at the Middle East in terms of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and some of the things we need to do. So, Medea, let us hear you speak now.
Okay, I think we're working now.
I am so glad you're focusing on Saudi Arabia. For those who might not be familiar with Medea Benjamin, she is the co-founder of Code Pink, but before that, she founded Global Exchange, and she's written actually 8 books, and the book that we're most going to be focused on right now today is Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the United States-Saudi Connection. And Medea, with Code Pink, just real quickly, I'm going to go back. We were also worried about the invasion of Iraq. And, you know, we had our warnings, our color signals, et cetera, orange and red and green and blue and pink. And not pink, but you decided to do pink. Isn't that how actually you organized Code Pink?
That's right, Mary. That was coming out of that crazy Bush color-coded alert system that made no sense except to keep people in the state of fear and to justify an invasion. And so ever since then, we said, all right, let's choose a different color, and that calls for a different kind of reaction. Go after the people who attacked us, and let's remember that 15 of the 19 of them were Saudis, and not invade a country, Iraq, that had nothing to do with 9/11.
Yeah, and you know, Medea, I have followed you now for years, whether it's in the North Korean demilitarized zone. You've been fighting for the Palestinians for years, and for women in all kinds of areas, whether it was Syria or Afghanistan, et cetera. And right before the Republican convention, you were out in the streets, and I was watching it on TV, and I was afraid you might get run over by a horse. And you were concerned because finally, after 14 years, they released those blacked out 9/11 studies about Saudi Arabia's involvement. What did you think about that?
It was crazy. That's right. They had 14 years to do it, and they chose the time, a Friday afternoon, right before Congress was getting ready to go on its summer recess, and right before the two national conventions were beginning, timed perfectly, brilliantly, to be totally disregarded by the mainstream media, and that's exactly what happened. So imagine these families, the 9/11 families who had fought for so long to get this information out, only to find that it was done in a way that nobody paid any attention to it.
Let's go back a little bit with Saudi Arabia, because, you know, it seems to me, and they act like they've been there forever, you know, kind of the whole pillars of the Middle East, if you will. But actually, they've only been around since 1932, about. And so tell me, what was about, well, obviously oil, but from the get-go, whether it was the Carter administration or the Reagan administration, we seem to have a really special relationship with Saudi Arabia.
That's right. It started out with oil, and that went on for decades, with the agreement that the U.S. would provide the security for this kingdom, which needed security because who wants to be ruled by a monarchy that just passes down the mantle from one brother to another? And the U.S. would prop up this regime in exchange for getting oil. And in the process, the money, the vast, vast billions of dollars from that oil was then, much of it, invested in the United States, in treasuries, in U.S. companies, and then started the weapons sales. That really began in the 1980s, 90s, and Saudi Arabia has since become the number one purchaser of U.S. weapons. According to the administration itself, $110 billion just during the Obama years. This is huge business. And so between oil and petrodollars and weapon sales, we have become tangled up in an alliance with one of the most repressive regimes in the world.
Yeah, and under the Reagan administration, they extended our, quote, special alliance with Saudi Arabia. And so tell us a little bit about, first of all, why do they need to be so repressive? And let's go into a little bit about the repression in Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's a good question about why do they need to be so repressive. I would say, first of all, because they're a regime that is totally antithetical to democracy. They don't allow people to speak out at all. They don't allow any kind of dissent. In fact, peaceful protesters get beheaded. People who merely blog that they want to look at alternative forms of government get put into prison for long prison sentences in addition to lashings. There is no room for political parties, for independent trade unions, for even non-profit human rights associations. There's no respect for religion other than the extremist form of Wahhabism. There's no respect for women's rights. There's no respect for the millions of migrant workers who have flooded into the country to take the jobs in construction and domestic workers that where they suffer tremendous abuses. So it is a society on all levels that is built up for male Saudis to benefit from the vast amounts of oil that they just happen to have under their soil and with no accountability to the population.
And tell me, Medea, why did they choose to support such an extreme version of Islam, Wahhabism? And actually, a lot of their schools actually became kind of training grounds for an awful lot of this ideology. Why did they choose that type, that aspect of Islam?
Well, this goes back to the pact that was made with the Imam Wahhab, who had this very intolerant, anti-Western view of Islam, and the Saudi, the original Al Saud family, Abdulaziz. And they made this pact early on between them that the Abdulaziz family would give the cover for the Wahhabist ideology and that together they would use this ideology to conquer the whole Arabian Peninsula. And then the Saud family declaring itself the king and the taking the mantle of the most holy shrines for the entire world of Islam. So again, this was a pact that they made that continues to this day, so that even if you have a king who wants to be more of a reformer, they are held back by this conservative clergy that are in charge of things like religion must be taught in all the schools, that get lots of money from the state to set up mosques, not only all over Saudi Arabia, but all over the world, thousands of them, as well as schools that are set up overseas where they pay the salaries of the teachers, they pay the salaries of the imams, and they spread this extremism. This is what happened in Pakistan. It's happened in North Africa. It's happened in places even like Kosovo. And it's happened in places in Europe, like in Belgium, where the more recent extremists have found refuge in mosques that are funded by the Saudis.
And Medea, and again, we're talking to Medea Benjamin, and we're particularly talking about Saudi Arabia, and particularly in regard to her latest book, Kingdom of the Unjust, behind the Saudi connection. And Medea, this whole very repressive house of cards, if you will, totally depends on oil, the revenues from oils. And yet we know that that is going down. And also we know there's a glut coming from many places in the world. And then with climate change, we realize that the time of oil is going to be over. And so to me, Saudi Arabia is going to break up sooner or later. So I'm really concerned with all the repression and all the poison they have spread with their kind of extremism they support. I'm really concerned because there you have the United States that, in a way, has been a lapdog to this whole process. And there we're watching right now in the presidential campaigns, you know, or Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And to tell you the truth, it's very worrisome when I hear both of them talk what they're going to do, you know, in Syria and Libya and et cetera. But if they don't deal with Saudi Arabia, how are we ever going to deal with ISIS and some of these problems?
Well, that's right. It's ISIS and it's the oil-based economy. Those two things are being held up by the Saudis. And you're right, we're not going to break free of them unless we break free of our relationship with the Saudis. It's quite remarkable to think that both the Democrats and Republicans, not only on the presidential level, but all the way down through Congress, have been approving of this relationship. Every time the Obama administration approves another round of weapons to the Saudis, Congress doesn't say anything about it. And that's why we have a campaign right now, Mary, with the new $1.15 billion that the Obama administration has just approved of weapons sales. This is being used by the Saudis to crush the people of Yemen with a ruthless bombing campaign. And we are saying to Congress, okay, enough is enough. You have the power to stop this, and you must do so. Now, they only have a month, and they're in recess for 3 weeks out of that month. So it's a very, very difficult campaign to launch, but that is something very concrete that we're doing right now and asking everybody that we can to contact their congressperson and tell them to stop the weapon sales to this atrocious regime.
And Medea, you've always been really, I think you really see things as they are. I know you're ahead of the game, so to speak, but to me, it's even more appalling how we kind of refuse to see. And just going back to the report that came out on the eve of the Republican convention, nobody paid attention, and they focused on Saudi Arabia's involvement with some of the people in San Diego. But really pretty conspicuously missing in that report was dealing with Saudi Arabia's connection with people here in Florida, where individuals with 9/11 got their training. So what do you think about that?
Well, that's right. And Senator Bob Graham has been at the forefront of calling not only for the release of this last tranche of 28 pages, but he says there's tens of thousands of documents that should be released to the American people that would show the connections in Florida, as well as a lot of other connections. Why were so many Saudis just whisked out of the country days after 9/11 when airplanes were grounded and nobody else could leave? There are so many unanswered questions. And I think that it's the Republicans and the Democrats. There are eight different lobby groups based in Washington, D.C. that are paid vast sums of money by the Saudi. Just one group called the Podesta Group, started by Tony and John Podesta. John Podesta, who is the chairperson of Hillary Clinton's campaign, they get $140,000 a month from the Saudi government. Tony Podesta is a registered agent of the Saudi government. That's just one connection. The Republicans have plenty of their own, and they are on the take, and they use this money to whitewash the image of Saudi Arabia and maintain silence about Saudi Arabia's involvement, not only in 9/11, but in the financing of al-Qaeda, the financing of ISIS. Now, I must say al-Qaeda and ISIS are the Frankensteins they helped create that now they can't control. But there are still very right-wing Saudi clerics that continue to preach the same kind of ideology that brings the new recruits to these extremist groups.
And Medea, if I could ask you, I never have been quite be able to figure out, because to me there's always been a connection. But with Saudi Arabia's possible involvement, I would assume not as a government, but what, individuals with 9/11? Is this just a demonstration of when you have so many different people you're financing to kind of keep them against each other so you can stay in power? Why would they want to be involved in a plot against the United States?
I don't think it would be people inside the government directly, but I think there's people who have close connections to the government, and they are people who hate the United States, just like Osama bin Laden hated the United States because U.S. troops were based on Saudi soil. During the In the early 1990s, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, remember back then? Osama bin Laden said the Iraqis might come in and invade Saudi Arabia. We have to protect our nation. Let's do it ourselves. And the Saudi kingdom said, no, we'll let the Americans do it for us. We've relied on the Americans for security for all these decades. Well, the U.S. poured 190,000 troops into Saudi soil, and that led to tremendous hatred, not only towards the United States, but towards the kingdom itself, the rulers who allowed the infidels, in quotes, to be on Saudi soil. And so from that time on, there has been a tremendous resentment towards the U.S. And people who are close to members of the Saudi government who also were opposed to that decision to allow U.S. troops on Saudi soil. So there's a lot of different factions of people internally in Saudi Arabia, and some of them are these ones that hate the United States, hate Western ideology, and are totally intolerant, and they have a lot of money.
And, you know, Medea, it really bothers me that actually it was Trump bringing up aspects of Saudi Arabia, but also aspects of NATO. And, you know, to me it's really troubling because where are the people in this country, particularly the progressives, the left, if you will? You know, why have we kind of complacently accepted these seven wars, so to speak, considering the drones, all this, and this excessive militarism, which is totally spread out into our streets? So what is it about, frankly, I think a terrible failure, really, of progressives? Your voice has been out there forever, but where have the voices been? Because to me, I think you said it, and I thought it was brilliant, that Trump just wants a better deal.
That's right. And let's not be fooled by him. Once in a while, he'll say some good things, but immediately he'll backtrack against it. Like you said, NATO was obsolete, and now he says he's happy that NATO is getting more involved in confronting the crisis in the Middle East. So I don't think we can trust him for anything. But what you say, Mary, is where are the American people? I think a lot of them got hoodwinked by Obama, thinking that he was going to get us out of these wars. And instead, what we ended up with was a continuation of a lot of the same policies and the use of drones in seven different countries and hostilities using NATO to encroach more and more upon Russian territory and build up this new Cold War with Russia. And so I think it's a very dangerous time. On the positive side, if it's Hillary Clinton in office, or even if it's, God forbid, Trump, American people aren't going to be fooled again, thinking they have a peace president, which means that it is time for us to rebuild this movement. And that's really why I'm on this book tour and going around and meeting with people around the country to say, okay, you know, let's not wait anymore. Let's build a movement that can confront whoever's in the White House, that makes connections with the bloated military budget to all the lack of funds we have for everything else we need, and makes connections to the environmental crisis and to the Black Lives Matter issue of violence in our communities and violence overseas. So we have a lot of work ahead of us, but I think we have a much better opportunity to build than we've had in the last 8 years.
Well, Medea Benjamin, I think it's one of the biggest things I've always admired about you, because so many of us get so frustrated. I think we want some of these problems to have been solved tomorrow and kind of all at once. And maybe we too much look for a single leader that's going to lead us through this maelstrom. And I think the thing I've most appreciated about you, that you are willing to build little victories. I remember dealing with you when you were dealing with women, both from Israel and the Palestinians. And I remember in Guantanamo how hard you have fought to get the people out of there. And the victory it really was to get one person out and to deal with this. And I think that really, frankly, I remember when you wrote your book on drone warfare, still one of the best books out there. And I remember you had a packed house when you were here in our area in St. Pete, you know, talking about that. And I thought you so clarified really what the drones were being used, how they were used, and what this just reflected about us morally. And so once again, I am thrilled you are dealing with Saudi Arabia, because I look at the Middle East and it has to be the worst abscessing sore I have ever seen. And it's the millions of people who are so suffering and are going to continue to suffer. And we can do so much to help there if we kind of get the blinders off and look to see what on earth are we doing in alliance with Saudi Arabia and who are we? And I repeat, Medea, I don't know how they choose the Nobel Peace Prize, but if they have a short list, you should be on it, girl. You should be on it. No, I'm serious. Well, you've been an inspiration.
Thank you for all the compliments, Mary, but we're all in this together in this relatively small progressive movement that we have that really demands that we get bigger and we get more sophisticated and more effective and we do it quickly. We've got all the Bernie supporters to build on. We've got all these young people who have seen through the problems of the capitalist system and are looking for something different. So we have a lot of great things to build on, and I'm just thrilled to be in Florida meeting with wonderful people and looking forward beyond the elections to see what we can do.
Well, Medea Benjamin, you keep up doing your thing, girl. And so thank you so much. And, Arlene, did you want to say something over there?
Well, I was just going to say, Medea, what do you most recommend? You know, we have a two-party system, so it's almost, I think it's certain that either Hillary or Trump is going to be our next president. What do you recommend that people be doing during this election campaign?
Well, I don't tell people which way to vote. I understand if people want to vote for third-party candidates like Jill Stein that I'm going to do, and I understand if people are going to vote, hold their nose and vote for Hillary Clinton because they're so afraid of Trump. I understand if they're going to go for Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party. I even understand people are going to go for Trump thinking that he is an anti-establishment candidate, because there are certainly people in my family who think that. To me, the real thing is, what are we going to build so that we have momentum to confront whoever is in the White House and confront our congresspeople? We let them get away with not representing us. So for me, it's more about movement building, and the election is just a personal choice that people have to make.
And it sounds like, as part of that, you're saying it's very important to look at who you vote for then in the certainly congressional elections, but also in our local elections, because it starts at the grassroots.
Well, that's right. That's where we can really make a difference. That's why people in our own communities can run and actually get elected to things like school boards and city councils. It's there that we really have a lot more power than on the national level.
Well, Medea Benjamin, you are doing your bit, and people, she is going to be in this area, so you have all kinds of chances to see her. And thank you so much, Medea. I know how busy you are for giving us this time today.
Okay, thanks so much, and I look forward to seeing you in person.
Yes, you will. You do take care. Bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye.
I really find her an inspiration. You know, I've been around her so much, and I know you have too, Arlene.
She is a very courageous woman. She's very creative. And she's fun.
Yes,
and
she
when
is.
You put those things all together, there's a lot that you can accomplish, and she has shown that to be the case.
Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the women's peace organization Code Pink, published a book titled Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection. This program included audio from the show From a Woman's Point of View on Community Radio WMNF-FM, Tampa, Florida, and streaming video from the Real News Network Summit on Saudi Arabia. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found at the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.